So a friend of mine's really into his music, and he always bans me from talking music with him. Like the other day, he said, look, Nate, I know what's going to happen. We'll start talking about music, and you're going to get the name of the Black Eyed Peas frontman wrong. And I said, huh, will I now? So that is a joke from a guy called Mark Simmons, who I've plugged before, who was on Mock the Week recently, I think, but he's very, very funny. You should go check him out. Lots of very good jokes like that.
I'd love to see you on Mock the Week, Nate. I feel like you're building a great portfolio here to...
Do you think? I mean, to be honest...
Look forward.
I was going to say that I've not really written anything of my own, but that's a lie now, isn't it? You know, as the episode the other week demonstrated. Yeah, I think I'd... Well, let's maybe park that thought for a second. what do you think?
I thought it was very good, Nate. I thought it was so good. It's going to get a 9.
Wow, it's back. It's in the pantheon of 9s. This is like, it's all for that good episode that we're working towards, right?
It's going to be a lot of work.
We've got some momentum here. And I'm just on that bandwagon. Yeah. So I'm enjoying it.
Well, at least I know now that a 10 is possible. But only when I write it, which is quite an ego trip.
You don't know that. You don't know that another joke that you haven't written won't get 10. We don't know that yet.
That's true. You know? I'll keep on.
I am very pro you writing your own jokes, so no pressure. Good. And you've just been on a plane, so hang on. Why didn't you write your own joke?
Good point.
I did, but I want to wait to tell them.
To when?
To the next episode.
Okay. When you get back from Brazil.
Yeah, I wrote 2 more, but I saw this one as well this morning, and I was like, I've got to use that. It's great. So
fair.
Got to break up the originality, you know. I want to save mine. Yeah, I've got a flight back as well, so you know. More magic could happen.
I like the way you're like saying we shouldn't be too original. We need to break up the originality with more copying of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think of that properly, but anyway, that's good. Another 9. What a run.
Welcome to The Pad Hoc, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Barreto, senior writer at F1.com.
And I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
And I'm Nate Saunders from ESPN.
That was sensational work. That was unbelievable.
You've all listened to history in the making. That was live. Med has bought himself a fancy new mixer and he introed us, keyed us in, and we did it live, no editing.
Yeah, and you know, it's meant to be because it's simple and no one would ever know the difference, and now we're telling you all about it.
I've lifted the veil up on podcasting. People are like, oh my God, I'm seeing inside for the first time.
And admittedly, this mixer is a lot of fun as well, like too much fun. So there's lots of buttons.
So much fun. I want to tell you a little story about, I got off the plane and I had this 12-hour flight from Amsterdam to Sao Paulo. I'm knackered and I'm trying to work out where I've got to go. Medis is like, mate, you're on the Wi-Fi. I was like, yeah, what's up? And he said, can I call you quickly? I was like, yeah, okay. Thinking like, oh shit, like something happened. And I was like, yeah, call me now. And he's like, mate, I'm here with Jess. We've got the mixer. Hello? And I was like, hello? what are we doing?
You were connected
and
on the call.
And like, it was great. He kept playing like applause for me and like people cheering.
Applause,
like,
did you say?
You're going to be insufferable, wow. Aren't you?
Yeah, that's why I need to mention it's too much fun. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that I can do. Yeah, now, which is really.
Do you
good.
Guys remember you could get a UK shop for everyone listening called Staples? You get that button where you could push it and it would go. That was easy. Do you remember that? Like people would have it in offices and stuff. But a friend of mine used to have that at uni, and he would just push it every time he finished a bit of work, and so it'd be like that was easy, and it became a running gag that basically he would just basically had an early version of what you've got there, Medders.
Wow! Did you say a running gag? Like a joke?
Yes.
So we've got that for that as well. And nice. If the joke was good.
What is bad?
Anyway, enough of that. Fun.
So Medis is doubling up as our producer from now on as well, which to be fair, you were already. But
already, yeah.
He's officially doing that.
Medis basically does everything for this podcast.
But now I've got toys. Yeah.
I've never seen you so happy, honestly. Like he's sitting there grinning like a Cheshire cat.
Well,
just wanting, he's trying so hard not to press another button.
Yeah, I really am. He is. So many, and they're all different colors. It's great. Admittedly, the problem is, though, I've now taken over our living room because it's a lot of kit. And I set it up last night to check it all worked, and just, you know, it only arrived yesterday and thought I'd have a little play around. And so I've set it up in the wrong place, basically, and haven't taken it apart yet. So, yeah, in case it's all echoey or someone comes in and makes a cup of tea or something, it's because I've basically sat myself right in the middle of the apartment to do this, but I don't care. It's too much fun.
Well, it's good timing you've got that, because last week you shared with me and Lawrence my favourite thing that a listener of the Pad Hoc has sent in, which I believe you've stored on that. But I think we need to, we need to get a plug in here.
We do. Martin said...
That's it, Martin.
He wanted
from
to,
South Africa.
It was, yeah. Martin Gill, who said he wanted to plug his music if he could, and that he did kind of jingles and things. So we said we need jingles, didn't we? Live on the Mexico podcast, we're like, we need a jingle. Can you send us a jingle for Nate's 60-second review? And the next day, we had one.
And it's superb. Like, I heard it and was like, that's fantastic. I genuinely, this is my favorite thing ever, probably.
I think what we're going to do, it's so good, it's going to get its own tease now. We're going to play it for you, and then we're not going to run the review straight away. We're going to play it and talk about the jingle, and then we're going to do the review.
And then we'll play it again and play the review.
Yeah.
So it gets a double hit on its debut.
Which, as people know, like in radio broadcasting, that's a no-no, isn't it? Don't play a song twice, but who cares? This jingle can...
We're rewriting the rules already. I've already lifted the veil on podcasting.
Yeah. You
know, we're just changing things. This is groundbreaking stuff.
So, ready, everybody? Here is the jingle.
If you've only got 1 minute to spare, want to know who finished when and where, sit back, relax, because we got you. Here's Nate with the 60-second review.
Wow.
Babe.
How good is
so
that?
Good. It's genuinely, when you sent me that, I thought, you know, you never know when someone sends something in. But Martin, that was amazing. So thank you so much for sending that and for letting us use it. Yeah, I love it. And we're going to plug your name incessantly for the rest of time.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say we, I mean, I will.
That's fine. Everyone wants a Nate plug, don't they? No one cares about Barreto and I. It only matters if it comes from you, Nate, to be fair.
Well, come on.
They're hard earned.
It means more, I think. It means more.
Note how I didn't deny that. I just did a little humble brag like, well, you guys.
Well, something else that people want from Nate is the review, to be fair. Mm. So shall we try and make these two things happen in unison and go... jingle and
then
review.
That's all on you, mate. I don't know how good you are with these buttons. This is gonna be big.
Major test. Here we go.
Yep.
If you've only got 1 minute to spare, wanna know who finished when and where, sit back, relax, because we got you. Here's Nate with the 60-second review.
Yeah, here we go. The newly jingled 60-second review from a high octane, high altitude Mexico City. The host of the Mexican Grand Prix, which was in Mexico City, which is in Mexico. First place was Max, Super Max, ahead of Lewis, who, like bread, is always just looking to rise. Third place, Sergio Perez, son of the 2021 world champion Antonio Perez, my favourite F1 dad of all time. We love Gasly, he was fourth. That position usually belongs to Charles Leclerc, him and Carlos Sainz, who was sixth. Fun bit of team orders there from Ferrari. Parade of world champions next, Vettel, Raikkonen and Alonso. Lando Norris, disappointed with 10th. Sums up how good his season's been, though, doesn't it? We had an angry Italian in Antonio Giovinazzi. He thinks his team's screwing him over. Daniel Ricciardo, a clumsy Australian in 12th. Lucky not to get a penalty. Esteban Ocon, the meat in a rookie sandwich at turn one. Not sexual, I'm afraid. Lance Stroll, a gentleman's 14th. Valtteri Bottas. Now, they say chivalry's dead, don't they? But the way Valtteri held the door open for Max Verstappen at turn one, I'd like to disagree. George Russell, don't worry, George, you're nearly at Mercedes. Just kind of keep on racing. Nicholas Latifi, 17th. Mazepin, 18th. Schumacher didn't make it past turn one. And guys, last position, Yuki Tsunoda. I don't know if you've heard the newsflash, but he's actually responsible for all of the world's problems right now.
Strong poor finish.
Yuki.
Yeah, very poor Yuki.
That obviously, I think he probably had the worst weekend of his life, didn't he? Getting blamed for Max not getting pole. And to be honest, he probably won Max the race, right? in hindsight.
Right, helping him. Yeah, not starting the front row. Yeah, it's actually worked out beautifully.
Red Bull should have put him on the podium, shouldn't they? It should have been Yuki went up as the constructor's representative. Thank you for your work this weekend, Yuki.
That's true. Probably is about the same height as Sergio's son as well, so it might have, looked like the same visual. sorry, Yuki, we love you, but you are very small. That's just something that, you know, everyone knows. But this ties in nicely. So this week we have a little Easter egg, which I did to follow on from that Yuki Tsunoda review. I did a little poem. So Medders, if you will.
I will.
Be so kind.
Okay, this is a little addendum, a poem called Yuki Tsunoda, Destroyer of Worlds by Nate Saunders, 32 years old. I've lost my keys. Yuki Tsunoda had them. I'm being stung by bees. Yuki Tsunoda released them. I'm allergic to trees. Yuki Tsunoda planted them. My dog's got fleas. Yuki Tsunoda stole his spray. I miss Drew Brees. Yuki Tsunoda made him retire. Stop ruining my life, please, Yuki Tsunoda.
Oh, Nate.
Wow. That's not gonna be, I can't do a poem every week, but I felt like that was needed.
Are you sure you can't do a poem every week?
Yeah, can you please? Because that was the funniest thing you've done on this podcast.
Wow. Okay. That's that says a lot about the joke format that we're stuck with, doesn't it? but I just want to reiterate, poor Yuki. I felt bad for him getting thrown under the bus, and I thought I'd write a poem about him. Just to clarify, I'm not saying Yuki Tsunoda is actually to blame for stuff, but people at Red Bull were. So I'm glad you guys like that. I'm worried now. People are going to be like, I just want a podcast that's just Nate doing a poem.
So this is why you didn't do any creative jokes on the plane, right? Because you were so focused on the poem.
Yeah, pretty much.
That makes sense now.
To be honest, all I was doing was rhyming things with fleas, trees, please. It wasn't that difficult. Like, you know, and to be honest, I don't know, you know, if there's any English like majors listening, you can probably tear that poem apart in terms of the structure. But nothing really rhymes with Tsunoda. So I just had to, you know. Anyway, first part.
I enjoyed it, Nate. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man. Since Miss Gallagher's English class in year 11, that's the last time I did a poem. And it wasn't about Yuki Tsunoda.
What was it about? Can you remember?
I don't know, to be honest. Probably Takuma Sato. No, I don't know. Got no idea. It was a long time ago.
Wow. I mean, there were so many opportunities there for me to hit so many buttons in response, but I couldn't even bring myself to. I was in tears.
I was quite sad I didn't at least get like an applause afterwards. But yeah. To be fair, you guys laughing was better than the canned laughter. So that works.
Yeah, the canned laughter is safe for when we don't find something funny. So, but that was genuinely hilarious. Well played. Very good. And it does kind of slightly segue us towards the whole Mexican Grand Prix chat, because that was a bit of a dull race, but had lots of storylines. It was kind of a weird weekend, I thought.
It was weird, wasn't it? It kind of, I don't know if Mexico isn't actually that great for racing, which is what a few of the drivers said, but like, yeah, there's still plenty of drama. Like turn one alone, there was Bottas leaving the door open, Bottas being hit by Ricciardo. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that kind of has ramifications going into this weekend, I guess. But we've had such good racing this season. I feel like we're allowed to have a 0-0 draw every so often.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I saw the Graham Rahal tweet where he was basically, you know, they've nailed the show and the reality TV and all that. Now F1 needs to sort the racing. That was really bad. And I was like, I mean, true on a number of fronts, but also it's not that it's been really bad every week. Like, it's been actually great most weeks. And yeah, you're always going to get the odd dodgy one. Like in any sport, you get a boring game or a poor game. There must have been IndyCar races that were boring this year that people would say that they watched and thought, oh, yeah, that was easily won from the front. So, you know, it just happens sometimes.
And the key for that race was a Mercedes leading into turn one, I think, for it to be entertaining. At least for, even if Max got past him like pretty early on. But as soon as Max was in the lead, it was like, okay, well, that's the fight for the lead done, because Max is just going to disappear now, you know. So it was kind of like, and obviously Perez got a bit closer, but I don't know.
Yeah, but really, like, how can we say this is Yuki's fault?
Yeah, I'm trying to work it out. Well, Yuki, he didn't even prompt a safety car at the start. Like, if you're going to get hit by another driver, you know, you need to at least park your car somewhere.
He did. It was a safety car.
Oh, no, yeah. Sorry, I was just...
Good memory, Nate. Right. Well done.
The race was so bad.
Can I read your race report back, Nate?
No, we can't edit this out because we're doing it live. Damn it.
As if I'd edit any of it out.
All the goodwill from the start of the episode is gone.
Oh, no.
I'm going to let Lawrence talk. Lawrence was there. So how was it being back in Mexico?
I want to just say quickly, I think Yuki had a really good weekend up until that moment in qualifying. I thought he was pretty mega. I think he's turned a corner. I think he's all right. He's going to be all right now.
Turned many. 16 on Sunday. Wow, Saturday.
It was matching Pierre, wasn't it? Like time-wise and stuff. So yeah, I agree with you. I think we need to say that because it's easy to just talk about all the comments about him.
I think it's insane how much bad press he's getting, considering people still forgetting that he's only had 2 years of international single-seater experience, and he's up against Pierre, who's smashing it out of the park.
Yeah, so I did a radio, like Twitter Spaces thing with Trevor Carlin on Monday, Matt Marsh does it over in Asia, was like Fox Sports Asia coverage of F1. And yeah, we did his Twitter spaces and Trevor said like Yuki is ridiculously quick. He's run him in F2 and he's run him before. He was helping him kind of get up to speed before the delayed season restart last year. And he said it's made him completely revisit his view and opinion of Pierre because he says, I know how good Yuki is. Like Yuki is the real deal. So Pierre is pretty damn special to be completely whitewashing him in qualifying, like absolutely smashing him out the park on a Saturday shows how good Pierre is, which I thought was really interesting because that's from a really well-respected team owner who's worked with young drivers all the way through. And he said, one driver he hadn't worked with was Pierre, so he didn't have his own grasp on it and could only go on what other people said. And then to know in his mind how good Yuki is or how quick Yuki can be. And that's another thing, isn't it? Like you said, he was really on his pace in Mexico. But it hasn't been often that we've seen Yuki match Pierre over one lap even. And that's where you're more likely to maybe do it as a rookie, that you might just get a lap together, get the car in the right window, but then over a race distance when there's a bit more going on, you might fall away because of the lack of experience. But he hasn't even been able to do that this year compared to Gasly. So, I mean, really, we just love Gasly, don't we?
We do love Gasly. And I think that's worth saying as well, because Gasly started this year with such good kind of momentum. You know, he'd found his form last year, he'd won a race. So I think Yuki was already kind of up against it in terms of matching him across the season. I mean, if you compare like Ricciardo, how long it took him to get up to speed at McLaren, and you compare that to a rookie, like Laz said, with very limited experience in single-seater racing. So, I hope this weekend he can keep that up because I think he needs to finish the season with a few good, kind of few strong results to point to.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a shame that it got focused on so much on Saturday because I think Red Bull did backtrack a bit as well on Sunday that, okay, maybe it wasn't all on Yuki and the team should have told him a bit more and that sort of stuff. But yeah, it kind of overshadowed a lot of what had gone on, actually. I mean, obviously it was a huge deal that Merck got the front row lockout, didn't then actually help them. But I mean, off the back of Austin, and we raved about how good that was. Barreto, what was the atmosphere like in Mexico? Because they had, 372,000 over the weekend there? So it was another huge crowd.
Yeah, it was insane. And not just even in the circuit, on the drive in, the traffic's always bad, but there were people streaming down sort of the pass. It's quite a long walk in for the fans to get into the circuit. And they were streaming in throughout while we were crawling along in the car. But inside the stadium, I think there's 30,000 you can fit in there when it's full. And the noise was incredible. And the most impressive thing was they were able to make that noise all day. So from the moment that they got in until the moment that they left, they were, chanting Checo's name. Essentially just having their own mini party inside the stadium. So I think we've been so lucky that we've had two events on the bounce where we've had people like full houses, proper events, kind of like the old days. And we had Zandvoort as well. So actually we've been really lucky this year in Silverstone to have so many events, especially in sort of COVID or post-COVID times. I don't know what we call this era, almost out of COVID era, or I don't know, but it's just been amazing that we've had so many full houses and so much great atmosphere. And they love Checo here, like they've always loved Checo, but they feel like they love him even more now that he could be in a car that can win.
Yeah, he had a strong weekend. I know he didn't get second or pole or a win or something, but just to see him on the podium was damn cool. And like Nate said, with his dad like afterwards being so happy about it, and that was really cool to see. It's amazing when you add it up, the last two events, like as fan totals, is over 750,000 people have been kind of tallied up as going to those two races. And there was a point where I remember Cota being worried that Mexico was going to kind of steal their fan base and that sort of thing, and could we have two races so close together? It's like, absolutely we can.
Well, the good thing is, I think it seems very clear cut now, doesn't it? I think you pick one or the other. You could go to both, or they've got very clear fan bases in each of them. I don't feel like America now feels like that. Mexico feels like America's taken Mexican fans away. I think they'll just go to the Mexican Grand Prix because that's an event or an atmosphere in itself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was the issue, wasn't it? I think, and Perez being a top team, I mean, you should see it in Austin. Perez had loads of fans there even. But I think there'd be a lot of fans of Perez in America who would rather go to Austin than potentially go down to Mexico City. It might just be easier. So even there, it's not like they're all just going to go, oh, let's go to Mexico City for the race, because Austin has its own, it's got its own vibe, its own energy to it. It's really great to see. I think Perez led for like one lap or two laps. And you could hear it on the TV, just the noise. It was noisy anyway, but when they were seeing him actually in the lead, even though obviously it was with the pit stops, they were just going mad. And I thought, man, imagine if this guy was actually legitimately leading the race. Would the noise like go down as they got nervous towards the end? Like that'd be great to see next year if he's able to, you know, be a bit closer to the front. I know he was third, but like closer to the win. It'd be great. That place would be bananas if he actually won it.
Yeah, you could hear the crowd getting louder and louder when he was catching Lewis, couldn't you? And as he got within a second and they'd come into the stadium section together and they were like absolutely bouncing. But then obviously the curse of not really being able to follow or overtake kind of hit at that stage. But without trying to kind of piss on Checo's parade, it was funny though, as the way the race panned out, exactly how really it was always going to, where people all week were like, but what do Red Bull do if Perez is leading and Max is? And it's like, that's just not going to happen. And it didn't. And it wasn't.
I felt like the reason, like when they asked Christian Horner about it, he was like, well, that's complicated. I feel like you could see he was like, I don't think we're going to need them.
Yeah.
You know, like, I no disrespect to Checo, but Max has just been better than everyone this year, hasn't he? But he's just so much further ahead of Checo. So I feel like Red Bull were kind of like, this is just a waste of us talking about it for 2 days.
Yeah.
And obviously they were going to, if that did happen, it's like, well, obviously they're going to move him. Like, I don't see why it was such a big thing. Like if Checo wanted to win the race outright, then he should still be in the championship fight. You know, that's what I would always say to someone who, like same with Bottas, when they tell him, oh, you got to move out of the way for Lewis, let's say. It's like, well, yeah, you should be closer to him in the championship if you didn't want that to happen.
Yeah. And I'm sure it would have really upset a bunch of local fans, but I also think, you know, the Mexican fan base is a pretty knowledgeable one. They get behind Checo. They appreciated, you know, his machinery before. So they knew that he wasn't winning races in a racing point because, he got one in the end, but, you know, regularly because that car wasn't good enough to be there. So if Red Bull then has swapped those two, they're appreciating the title picture and what he's doing, the job he's doing for the team. The fact that he's got this opportunity to be in a front-running team is a good thing. I don't actually think it would have been quite the chaos people think it might have caused. I think, yeah, maybe at the time it wouldn't have gone down brilliantly with a lot of the fans, but as soon as the race was over, they're going to understand exactly why it was done. So, I don't think Red Bull needed to worry too much anyway, but it didn't even come close, did it? Which, you know, in the end, it was a pretty impressive job from Lewis to keep Checo behind in the sense of this weekend or last weekend, that Red Bull was definitely the quicker car. And if it plays out in pace order, Lewis ends up third behind them. So he loses 10 points to Max. So it's as damage limitation goes. They're both so good at it, Lewis and Max. Every weekend, it seems to be first or second. Like if you've not got the quickest car, you're second. You don't get beaten by the other car.
And going back to that point we were saying about it wasn't the best race, I think it wasn't the best race from an entertainment point of view, but it kind of, people saying that almost overlooks that point that you're making there, Chris, doesn't it? Like it was such a good race from both of them. Lewis, you know, Max minimized the damage in the championship. You know, he could have, if he'd finished third, I think, I mean, Max would be over 25 points ahead, wouldn't he? Which is obviously one win. Or would he be close to that?
It'd be 22, but it'd be over 20.
Sorry,
yeah.
Of course, yeah, 22. Yeah, sorry. That's me getting my maths completely wrong. Well, I'm having a shocker since the poem.
Really? Or just generally?
Just generally, just life. But you're absolutely right. And this fight, like both of them, every race are kind of raising the bar and, you know, putting that, making sure the other one has to raise their game. You know, Lewis, two races in a row, has been right there, either holding off Perez or in Austin, pushing Max and being like, you know, you've got to win this without making a mistake. And he did. So I'm really enjoying that part of it. And I'm really, it feels like, I don't know if you guys feel the same as me, but it just feels like this championship has one more moment in it. It just feels like, you know, a lot of people saying like, oh, it looks like Max is to lose now, but I'm like, there's one more thing that's going to happen. I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to go one way or the other, but it just feels like this championship's been so spicy. They've had two collisions and sometimes, you know, they say those things happen in threes, you know, like I don't know. I've just got that feeling going into it. Maybe that's just me being a journalist and trying to hype it up, but I don't know if you guys feel the same as me.
I think we've got a circuit in Brazil where I think that lends itself to some interesting moments. Lewis has got quite an impressive history there of things going right or wrong for him. We've got in Saudi, which is obviously new and we don't quite know what's going to happen there, and Qatar as well. So I think you're right, Nate. I think that although it is looking like it's heading in Max's favour and he's kind of done everything he's needed to in the last couple of races to give himself that cushion, I feel like there's like, well, at least one or two more things that's going to happen, because it's going to come to a point where they're going to have to take more. One of them is going to have to take more risks because if they want to have one more or keep themselves in it. And so I'm interested to know what happens when Lewis has to take a risk, because we haven't really seen that for a long, long time.
Well, it was Silverstone, wasn't it? As well.
Sorry, I was going to say Silverstone was the time that he had to take a risk as such. And I don't think Max kind of appreciated that Lewis was going to do that. And you got the collision you got. And that turned the thing on its head. Before Silverstone, the gap was way more than a race victory. And I think Lewis turned it round by 41 points over that in Hungary because of the collision they had. And then obviously with Valtteri's start error in Hungary. But again, like Max was blameless there. And it wasn't like, you know, people talk about Valtteri took him out, but he hit Lando. So it kind of, it triggered something that took Max out of the running for the win. Lewis didn't even win that race, but that turnaround was in two races so rapid when it looked like Red Bull had it all sewn up after Austria, in a sense, with the gap they had and the performance they're showing. So yeah, it definitely can all change very quickly still.
Yeah. And that's what's quite interesting. I think that Lewis being the one that's kind of chasing makes this very interesting to me as well, because Silverstone's a great example. In this case, let's say we're in the penultimate race and Lewis goes all out for an overtake. Max shouldn't fight that, you would think, you know, given the points lead. But that's when the experience, the age comes into it. You know, is he, I think he's really shown that he's grown up a lot this year, but it's going to be so interesting when those two guys, if those two guys get close together again, you know, turn one in Brazil, let's say they both start turn one. That's a short run down to turn one. And we've seen all sorts of things happen at turn one there before. I don't know. It just feels like there's something left. And also they've made tweaks to Abu Dhabi as well, which in itself is quite interesting. You know, some banked corners there now as well. So lots of like unknowns in the final races, which kind of adds that extra spice to it.
Yeah, that Abu Dhabi one could be actually really interesting because something Merck have said is when the temperatures are high and you get rear tire overheating, that's when Red Bull seem to do better than they do. So if it's a little bit cooler, it suits Merck better. Now, Brazil can be roasting or it could be like pretty cold and grey and wet. So who knows, it'll come out on top in that sense. But then you've got evening races in the final three, so temperatures should be coming down. But then what Abu Dhabi have done as well is take away five, I think, like slow speed corners where you'd have, not all of them had traction zones out of them, but at least two or three were like big traction zones out of slow speed corners where rear tire temps will go up. So they've actually kind of, the characteristic change probably suits Merck a bit more than it suits Red Bull based on that. So there's all these elements that, and it was only what, out of the last four races, you'd say Sochi and Turkey, compared to Red Bull, Merck had the advantage. Like, I know Max came through the second in Sochi, but he wasn't actually quick. It was
the conditions, wasn't it?
They helped that final result. And then Turkey, definitely Merck, miles on top. Then, flip a coin for Cota, really. And Max got the job done. That was really impressive. And then Mexico was Red Bull. But, you know, over those four, probably slight advantage Merck, actually. It's just that the last two have been won by Max. Yeah. And that makes everyone go, he's going to run away with it.
Well, both teams are very good at the moment. Yeah, and both teams are very good at the moment of saying that the other team is going to be stronger at the next races. Have you noticed that? Like Red Bull are like, Mercedes is going to be much quicker in Brazil. Mercedes is like, Mercedes really surprised us this week and blah, blah, blah. So they're both just kind of, you know, it's almost like we're in preseason again where everyone's just like, well, they look good. They look great. And we're kind of, everyone's trying to guess how much they're bluffing and how much is mind games and how much they're actually like, they are actually quicker than us.
So what about this weekend then?
I don't know.
You're both there, so you must have better knowledge, you see.
The weather looks quite interesting this weekend. So I think the sprint race, I'm not sure how much the forecast is like percentage of rain, but the weather gets better, doesn't it, by Sunday from last I checked. So the race looks like it'll be good, but the weather, so we'll have qualifying Friday, sprint race Saturday. You know, we can moan about sprint racing on another podcast because I think we've done that already, haven't we? I didn't mind it. Yeah, it could be good here, but I think that in itself is going to be interesting because there's 3 points to play for there. And those 3 points are much more important to Lewis right now than they are to Max. And I think that we're talking about aggression. I think that's when we're going to see Lewis really, I know it's only potentially 1 or 2 points, but also starting ahead of Max on Sunday is going to be key. So I think that, you know, aggressive Lewis, we haven't seen much of this year. That's when we'll see it. I still think Max is going to win this weekend, but I think Lewis will be second again. I don't know why. I just feel like Max is on that run at the moment. And then going to Qatar, I think that's when, because of the unknown factor, I think that's when we get the fireworks. But if it happens this weekend, like you mentioned, I'm here, so that would be great. Because I don't know about you guys, but Brazil, because it was the title deciding race, whenever you go to Interlagos, you're just like, oh my God, like this is big. Something's going to happen. And it, you know, maybe it hasn't for a while, but it just feels like there's that potential always to do that here.
Absolutely.
I always feel like it's such a special place when you walk in that you feel like you can feel that there was history there. You can feel like there were mega moments that had happened. And when you walk the track or run the track, or just if you're in and about the paddock or have a walk around the venue, you just feel like it's a really cool place. So I just hope, I love the fact that we'll keep coming back to this place.
I remember in 2018 doing the track run and going to where the Glock Hamilton moment happened. And actually on that circuit, it's kind of a nondescript part of the circuit when you're actually stood there. You know, the like, you know, there's more fans, the fans sort of start sitting the further on you get, and there's fans lower down. But where you are, when you're stood there, you're like, this is just like the crest of a hill really here. And it goes back onto a great part of the circuit and it comes from a great part, but you're stood there and you're like, I can't believe like a world championship was decided right here of all places on this circuit. It could have been anywhere, turn one, you know, it could have been anywhere. And then you're just stood there and you're like, oh wow. Like, I don't know. That's just the feeling I got when I was there. I almost had to double check, like, is this really where it is? And because then it obviously kind of goes off to the left and then you're back up on the start finish straight. It is a great place. And I wonder what the atmosphere is going to be like. We miss Massa a little bit, but the atmosphere is still great.
Just on that point, when you were running the track, did you stop there to take in that moment and kind of see the area? And was that because it was all uphill after that and you needed a breather?
It was 100% the hill. And then it actually took me a second to work out where I was. Like, I was thinking about it the whole way around, like, oh, this is the Glock bit. But then by then I was so gassed. I just thought, oh my God. Probably the same will happen Thursday, I'm guessing, because...
Well, the air is thinner, Nate, so...
It is, and I'm not, sadly, than earlier in the year. It's a good track run, though, and it's quite a small track, isn't it? When you actually run it, you're amazed at, A, how small it is, but B, how they managed to pack in so much elevation change, so many great corners into, like, what is, you know, a fairly small circuit when you compare it to other places on the calendar.
I'm doing a track walk with Felipe Massa tomorrow morning for the pre-race show. So I've got like an hour with him. So that should be quite cool to walk around. So I spent some time with him in Mexico and he was talking about how generally we're talking a little bit about the championship, but he was saying how it's interesting that now obviously you've got social media, there's more online digital media. So it's reporting things that people say a lot more. So it kind of builds the tension. Whereas when he was fighting for the championship, he kind of said something then and no one really talked about it until the next race weekend. And then it would pick back up then. So it didn't really feel like the tension didn't build as quickly as it built now, which I thought was interesting.
It is a good point, isn't it? Because Lewis made the comment about Bottas, said, oh, you know, left the door open. And he also, there was a quote, wasn't there, about, he said, Red Bull's quick when Checo's behind you, which to be fair, I think you could see what he was meant to be saying. But he clarified them both the next day. So you have the first hit of him saying those two things. Then you have his clarification. You know, and let's say either of those two guys had then followed up, you then have another news story as well. Mm-hmm. And that has moved the news agenda along three times in 3 days. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting you say that. I did a piece in 2018, 10 years on, where I spoke to a lot of the people involved. And Massa said that actually at the time. And a few of the other people I spoke to said that the tension really, it didn't feel like the build up to a race weekend until everyone arrived in Brazil. And then suddenly the media day, it was like, oh my God, we've got a title decider on our hands, which I thought was really interesting because nowadays, you know, if you had a 3 week build to a decider where the two guys are split by barely any points, that would be insane for 3 weeks of it. You'd have thought pieces, you'd have people digging into quotes, like you'd have everything. So back then, even, you know, 2008, which was probably just as Twitter was created in 2008 or 2009. So we're talking just before like the social media age really kicked off. Facebook was getting big then, I remember. But yeah, it's interesting. Do you think Massa, to go back to him, do you think he's ever done an interview where he hasn't had to talk about 2008? Because I feel like every time that just comes up, and it must just be something where he's like, I have to talk about it. You know?
I don't think so. But I said to him before we started, because we did a few different things, content grabs, and I said, I'm really sorry, but like one of the things we're going to talk about is 2008. He was like, yeah, that's fine. Obviously, that's the thing that most people want to talk to me about. And I'm happy to talk about it for as long as you want to talk about it. And I think that the fact that he just gets that is great. And he's so eloquent when he chats about it. He's just such a nice guy, isn't he?
Ask him about when he found out that he hadn't won the championship. Because when I spoke to him and I spoke to Rob Smedley for that feature, and Smedley said that he didn't actually say anything to Felipe. You know, Felipe crossed the line and Smedley was so focused on Lewis and Glock's times that he almost didn't kind of recognize the fact that Felipe, he obviously knew Felipe had won, but usually you say, you know, great race mate. I think somebody said to him, we're just waiting to see how it plays out. And then Smedley had to process the moment himself. And then be like, how on earth am I going to tell this to Felipe, who's A, celebrating winning his home race, but also is probably thinking like, okay, well, sounds like I might have won the championship. And then he said he told him. I think there was just kind of silence on the radio for like the next half of the lap. And then Massa came back. And I just imagine like nowadays you'd hear that all that radio comms would be on Twitter and you'd hear it. But it's fascinating to understand. And that drive back for Massa, like the change in emotions he must have had from crossing the line to parking his car up. Like, you know, I really respect the way he celebrated that race. I've always thought he really handled himself really well. But you can imagine that, like, that's like a heartbreaking 2 minutes. You've gone from thinking, I've won the championship at my home race to I've lost the championship. This could be it. I might not get this chance again. And then the reverse for Lewis, like in the space of half a lap or whatever. But yeah, that would be interesting. Obviously, don't just talk to him about that race. He'll probably kick you in the groin or something. Massa wouldn't do that, would he? Massa wouldn't do that.
No, he's too nice.
He's a very nice man.
But as you've just said it, that makes me think kind of the way this season's panning out, I can't see a similar situation where people will have that outpouring of kind of sympathy for whoever doesn't win the championship.
Yeah.
And it sounds weird.
It's become very toxic, hasn't it?
Feeling
around everything.
And because Lewis has obviously won so many, I don't think anyone's going to have huge sympathy if he doesn't add an eighth. Obviously, like Hamilton fans are going to be upset about it and Lewis himself won't be happy about it. But I think, you know, with Felipe, it looked like his one and only chance, essentially. And it just all came together perfectly in a Ferrari at home. Like it looked, and to cross the line technically as champion at that point, I guess that's why there was that outpouring. But by the same token, I think the way Max has kind of talked about it and how it won't change his life and, you know, we just do the best job we can and we'll do the same next year, like whatever happens this year, like kind of almost dumbs, it's like he's trying to dumb down the significance. Maybe he's trying to convince himself, but I just feel like it's lacking that right now. And maybe it'll be different come Abu Dhabi, but that's just my opinion right now.
I think Max, it's been clever of him to say that, though. I think you've got to downplay the emotion, because then if you make a mistake, people are like, oh, he's too emotional. You know, he's thinking too much about it. And to be fair to him, he does seem like he processes pressure quite well, doesn't he? Max seems to be like this robotic kind of, not robotic personality-wise, but he just doesn't seem to get fazed by pressure at all. Like, I'm stressed when I'm boiling the kettle. Like, oh, God, I've got to pour my coffee now. Like, I hope I do it right. I'd be terrible in that situation.
I can't wait to see if Max does win, if he goes absolutely mental and he kind of goes the complete opposite way to the way that he's treated every other race win or every other strong result that he's had. I hope that when he does win the title, he genuinely shows how much it means to him, because evidently it means a lot to him, even if he doesn't outwardly talk about it or outwardly show emotion. So I'm really interested to see how he will react should he win. But I'm also interested to see what Lewis is going to do, because if you look at it, I think he's only had 3 poles this year, something like that, and 4 or 5 wins. So the very fact that he's still in the fight anyway, even if he doesn't win it this year, he's got to be pretty impressed that he managed to hold it all the way to the end. Anyway, I think both of them have been pretty astonishing this year.
I think this could be one of Lewis's best seasons. I know even if he doesn't win the championship, I think that this one people will look at and say, in hindsight, I know they have had the collisions and Max probably should be further ahead and all that stuff, but it's so impressive that he's been here.
I completely agree.
I think the point on Max, I remember being really surprised when Vettel won the title in 2010. Vettel was quite similar. Like, he always did the crazy frog celebration when he won, didn't show kind of that much emotion. Like, he was always very happy. But when he won in Abu Dhabi, it was just floods of tears and emotion. And you suddenly realize, whatever I think about this guy, like, this is clearly, like, this is the thing that he's been driving his whole career for. And it just reminds you, same with Alonso, like the way he celebrated in 05, you suddenly remember, like, yeah, this is like the dream for all of them. Whereas like Lewis seemed to just be like stunned in 2007. Like you could see he didn't really know in 08, he was like stunned. He was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that's happened. Like the emotion was almost in like the shock of actually doing it and getting out of the car. And there was that great bit when him and his dad hugged for ages. I remember that. And you could see like that bit was like his emotional moment as well. So yeah, it's nice when those guys do win it. And I think Max, I think they'll all be fairly emotional when you win your first championship. And if they're not, I think it'd be quite worrying to the rest, because it's like, this guy doesn't even get emotional when he wins his first championship. Like, there's literally going to be there's no stopping this guy.
Yeah, I'm just going to pick up on Barreto said, though, about Lewis and how the season's gone for him. So you're right, 3 pole positions, of which 2 were in the first 4 races. So he had 1 other pole in Hungary, and that's it.
And 3 wins at the start of the season as well, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, technically, we've got the sprint where he was on pole at Silverstone, wasn't he? But it wasn't pole and all that. So he won 3 of the first 4. Since then, he's only won twice. He won Russia and he won Silverstone. So since Silverstone, it's been, he's got as many wins as Esteban Ocon and Daniel Ricciardo and Valtteri Bottas. And Max has had 4 in that time. Like it's
wow.
It is remarkable actually that he's managed to keep it close. And I think that's another reason though then not to write it off yet, because clearly
they're
sort of being able to do that without being able to win so many races. Means that there's every chance it'll go right to the wire.
And I think for Max as well, like for him, the significance of beating Lewis for his first championship like this would be huge as well. I mean, you know, winning your first title anyway would be big, but if he can turn around and if whenever it is he wins the title, let's say it's the final race, whatever, the added significance of I beat a 7-time world champion, possibly the greatest driver of all time to do it, like the gravity of that as well is going to be massive. Like when Alonso beat Schumacher, suddenly it elevated his kind of standing to like, oh my God, this guy is legitimately very, very good. Not just great. He's like the next level up from that.
And he beat Lewis, if he does beat Lewis, he'll be beating him when he's at the top of his game, which is even more impressive, right? So it means much more to him. It's more significant, I think, in Formula One history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's quite.
We've already crowned Verstappen champion.
Yeah, I was going to say a few times, didn't we? It's looking that way. Shit. I mean, you guys are there though for this weekend. Like, yeah. I mean, it's going to be mega to see kind of how it pans out. I mean, every time we think it looks like it's going one way, it goes the other. So I'm fully expecting to speak to you both when you have made your next long haul flight and be like, oh, so we got that wrong.
Yeah. Well, the big one, so we only get one grid pass per publication. So Lawrence Edmondson went on the grid in Austin. I can't wait to get back on the grid because the tension before some of these races towards the end of a championship year is really special. And I think you're going to be able to feel that on Sunday. So I'm really excited for that.
This is the best grid, I think, of the year.
The fans are basically on top of you, aren't they?
The way that kind of grandstand kind of curves over and it creates a sort of din. So the way like an echoes chamber is incredible. And it's quite narrow as well. And just the atmosphere. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited that you can get on the grid, Nick.
Oh, I'll see you there, Laza. Well, I'll see you before then, hopefully. Well, not hopefully. I will yes. categorically see you before then. But for the purposes right, of the podcast, see you then.
Thanks very much for your time, guys. And thanks to everyone who is listening as well. Remember to hit the subscribe button and follow us on our social channels. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Meadows' work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com. We'll do this again very, very soon. Meadows, have you got a button to press?
I think we say bye.
Bye.